And we're holding on Kofiyut Bey's, Umud Bey's, four lines from the bottom. We've been in the middle of talking about procedures of Beis Din to call people to a Din Torah. We got into this by way of talking about when there's a Din Torah that involves a child, then we said the child is considered as though he wasn't there, and therefore you can't have the Din Torah as long as he's a child, because even if he is physically present, we don't consider that he is actually present. And that led us into the concept of, in general, when are we able to be Mekabel Eidos, when a Baal Din is there versus not. And that's been getting us more generally into discussions about the procedures of Beis Din. So the Gemara says, Amar Ravina, Hai Shlucha de Rabbanan, a Shliach Beis Din, who goes to somebody to summon somebody to a Din Torah, Mehim Ninen Leike Beitre, we believe him like two Edim. So if he comes back and reports, for example, that the person doesn't want to come, then Beis Din can trust him as though it was two Edim and put the guy in Theorem or do whatever it is that needs to be done. The point being, Rashi says, because he's not going to lie directly and he's not going to lie in the Beis Din when he's their Shliach. However, Ravina says that's only as far as putting the guy in Theorem for not coming. But when it comes to writing out a document of Theorem, a document of Nidui, that would be different, because that would involve a cost of money to the guy, because the one against whom the Nidui is written would have to pay the sofer. Rashi points out that the Nidui is not going to be removed from him until he pays the sofer for writing this document. Tosfos says it a little differently. When they rip it up, which the Pashtus means the same thing, when the Nidui is over and they're going to rip it up, then he pays the sofer. So because it does involve that financial cost to him, Loi, then no, we can't rely on the shliach based in himself to go so far as writing a psicha. For that, we need two aid that say that he doesn't want to come. Further on this topic of summoning people to Beis Din, Amar Ravina, Yahavinan Zimna Apuma de Itza. When Beis Din summons somebody to a Din Torah, they can give the summons Apuma de Itza through a woman. You can have, for example, that instead of sending a Shliach Beis Din, you can have there's a woman comes in front of Beis Din. She says, you know, I'm going in that direction anyway. I'll bring the guy the message from Beis Din that you want to see him, and that's valid. They can do that. And similarly, Apuma de Shibavi, the same way, based on neighbors, where you have people who are going to be traveling there, and they can tell him that Beis Din wants to see him on such and such a day. And we rely on them. The point is, we're not concerned that we figure shliach oisa shlichosai, we can assume that they will accomplish their shlichos, and therefore if he doesn't come, then we're not going to attribute to, well, the person who was supposed to tell him must have forgotten. No, we say that they probably did tell him and then he didn't show up because he's disobeying the Beis Din, and therefore we have a valid reason to put him in chay. However, the Gemara says, "V'le'amon elu delesse b'masa." That's only if this guy, the Baal Din, who we want to summon to Beis Din, only if he's not present in the city right now. So then, since he doesn't live in that city, since he doesn't live in the same city as the Beis Din, then we can assume the woman or the neighbor know that this is serious business, and they're potentially putting him in danger of chedem, and therefore they'll be sure to tell him. Aval ise b'masa loy. But if he lives in the same town as the Beis Din, then we can't use them as go-betweens and say that if he didn't come to Beis Din, then we should put him in Chayrim, Da'amrin and Emerlei Amrlei, because we can say it's very possible they didn't tell him, Da'amri, because they may think to themselves, Ashkechinu Shlicha de Beis Din va'Amrlei, the Shliach Beis Din himself may have met up with the guy in the street or come to his house or whatever and told him. So they're not going to consider it as much of a serious responsibility. We better tell him, because otherwise he's in danger of being put in Chayrim. And whereas when they're out of town, they know Beis Din is not necessarily going to send a shliach Beis Din all the way to their town. So therefore, when they're willing to deliver the message, then we can assume they in fact follow through and they do deliver it. Continues the Gemara. V'loyam moran elu delech cholif abava de Beis Din. Furthermore, even this that we're saying that we can send a woman or neighbors to summon him when he lives out of town, that would only be if he doesn't regularly pass by the door of the Beis Din shtibel. above the Beit Din, but if he regularly travels from his other town and comes to town and he passes by the Beit Din, loy, then again, you can't necessarily rely on the go-betweens to tell him Amri, because they're going to think to themselves, the members of the Beit Din must have met up with him at some point and told him. So therefore, they're not going to think, they're not going to think it's so important that we give him the message. And therefore, if he disobeys, then it doesn't mean necessarily that he's doing it deliberately out of disobedience to Beit Din. He may have not gotten the message. And furthermore, this is also talking about in order to send a woman or a neighbor can only be when he comes back to, only when he travels back and forth to his town on that day. But if he doesn't plan to return on that day, loy, then so this is this pliny that that so we're talking about that only where the woman or the neighbor are going to be traveling and going to there on that day. But if they don't plan to go on that day, loy, then you can't rely on them because then we have to be concerned that they might have forgotten the message. So in short, in order to send an isha or a neighbor as a shliach Beit Din instead of a regular shliach Beit Din, instead to give the message through them, it has to be that the guy lives out of town. It has to be that he doesn't regularly travel to town and pass by the Beit Din shtibel, and that the messengers themselves. That the messengers themselves are able to go and are able to go there and reach there that same day, where therefore it'll still be fresh in their mind that they need to that they need to tell him, and only in that case can we the way that it explains in Shulchan Aruch is actually when it says Deloy Osila Yoima means only if this guy. Only if this guy regularly travels to town on that day. So now they know he travels there every day or on the days when Beit Din sits. And now he didn't come that whole day. Then that evening they can put him in chayim. But again, if we're talking about when he comes to town, he regularly actually passes by the Beit Din shtibel. Then you need an actual shliach Beit Din, because then the neighbors may not have told him, may not have told him in the first place. They figure either the Beit Din told him that he has to come, or he arranged things with the Beit Din that he is potter or whatever. If he only comes the next day, then also we can't rely. The neighbors may have forgotten and told him. Okay. Next, the Gemara says, Omar Rabbah. When you have a person that a psicha, which again is a shtar, saying that he was put in chayrin, when you have a person with such a shtar was written against him, al delay osi ledina, because he failed to come to Beit Din, then ad de osi ledina lemakar in and lay. Then Rava says we don't actually tear up the document and take him out of chayrin until he actually comes to Beit Din. On the other hand, if they're putting him in chayim because he didn't listen to the dayanim, he did come to the din Torah, but then he didn't follow through and do what the Beit Din told him to do. Then Rava says, ad tzayis loy makarin alei. Then we don't tear up the document until he actually listens and follows through what he's supposed to do. However, the Gemara says, "Veloy he." That second one is not so. Kivin da'amot sayisna. Once he says, "I will do what the Beit Din says," karin and lay. Then at that point, we rip up the document and take him out of chayim. Because now, in other words, when he didn't come, then he's not coming at all. That's chutzpah of him to not come to Beit Din at all. So therefore, we keep him in chayim until he actually comes. But when it's a matter of him disobeying the Beit Din and saying I'm not gonna and then not actually paying or whatever, then we can say, you know what? The fact is he Beit Din said he has to pay, but right now he's short of money. So now he's looking around, as we learned yesterday, he's looking for people to borrow from or to sell things to or whatever. So once he says, I will do it, then already we can take him out of chayim, because now we have every right to assume that he is actually working to get the money together. Okay. More dinim on this topic. Omer Rav Chista. Now, we learned before that Beit Din sits Monday, Thursday, and Monday. We learned this yesterday, and we actually learned earlier in the Masechta as well, at the end of Perek Meruba, we said that Ezra made the takana that they should do that. So now, Omer Rav Chista, koivim zman sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. We set a time for the summons to Basedon on Monday and Thursday and Monday, meaning in other words, and Zimna Vizimna, boss of Zimna. And in fact, each time it means that we give him each time after the other one. So in other words, what we do is like this. We summon him to Basedon to be there on Monday. If he doesn't come on Monday, we don't yet put him in Cherem. We send him another summons and say, you got to come on Thursday. Then if he doesn't come on Thursday, then we send him another summons and say that he has to be on Monday, that he has to come on Monday. If all those three times he fails to come, then the next day we wait the entire Monday to see if he shows up, the second Monday, to see if he shows up. If he doesn't, then on Tuesday we write out the psicha, the star that he's being put in cheirem, because after all, he might come sometime on Monday, and therefore we can't do that yet. So in other words, we don't tell him to begin with, you have to be here either Monday or the next Thursday or the next Monday. We tell him to begin with, you have to be here Monday. If for whatever reason he doesn't come on Monday, then we send him another summons and we say, you have to come on Thursday. And the same thing the following Monday. And then after those three times do we write the psicha. Continues the Gemara. Rav Asi Iklod Bei Rav Kahana. Rav Asi, or different Girsa says on the side, it should be Rav Ashi, whatever. Iklod Bei Rav Kahana. He one time visited Rav Kahana's based in. He saw there was a case involving a woman where she had been summoned one evening. They had sent her a summons to come to Basedon the next morning. And then in the morning already Rav Kahana wrote out a psicha because she hadn't come yet. What about what Rav Chista had said that you give her Monday, Thursday, and Monday? How come over here all of a sudden you're putting her in cheirem right away the next morning? Rav Kahana explains to him, Hani Mili Gavra. You know what? There's a difference. Rav Chista Din was talking about a man, the honest, because he may many times have an onus. He may be busy. He may be busy with his work or with his business or whatever. And therefore, the less ibemasa, he may not even be in town. Aval itza, but a woman given to isse ibemasa, she's usually in the town. She doesn't travel and she doesn't go on business. V'lai asya, and she's still not coming. Meredesi, then it means that she's meredes. It means she's disobeying Basedon, and therefore we can put her in cheirem right away. So that is the halacha with the detail though that the poskim talk about, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. It really depends, of course. You know, obviously you can have a woman who does do business, you can have a woman who does travel out of town and therefore is not available right away. So then obviously she would have the din of a man for that purpose, and vice versa, if you have a man who regularly stays in town all the time, then of course he would have the same din as this woman. So in Shulchan Aruch, it summarizes that when do we say that we give him Monday, Thursday, and Monday is only a person who was in the villages, the Yotzev and Nichnas, and he's traveling in and out and going this way and that, but somebody who's always in the city, we only give him the one time. If he doesn't come that day, then we put him in Cheirem the next day. Next. Amr of Yehuda, lo yahavina zimna loy biyemin nisin v'loy biyemin tishrei. We don't send a summons for a person to come to Basedon during Nisan or during Tishrei, because Rashi explains Nisan and Tishrei are the times of harvest. The Nisan is the time of harvest. Tishrei is the time of gathering of harvesting the grapes. So therefore, some people are busy, and therefore people are going to be busy, and they may forget all about the summons. There are a number of other explanations among Rishonim why Dafka Nissen and Tishrei. The Rambam brings that the reason is because it's Yom Tov time, so therefore people are busy with Yom Tov. Now, in fact, the Rif mentions Sivan as well. And then you have the question, well, should Sivan be included? The Gemara is going to go on to say that you don't call on Erev Yom Tov. So the Drisha on Tur points out that obviously then it must be that what the Rif is saying, Sivan, can't be correct. It must be a mistake in the text of the Rif, because otherwise then if you have Nissan, Sivan, and Tishrei, you've already covered all the Yom Tovim, and there'd be no reason for the Gemara to separately mention that you can't summon somebody on Erev Yom Tov. You can't send somebody a summons to Beis Din on Erev Yom Tov. So he takes out the word Sivan. With that said, there are other Mefoshim that give different possibilities. The Shita Mokobetzis brings from a Moshe Misara Costa that it really depends on what the local harvest season is, and b'chlal, whether the local Jews are farmers. So in places, he says, in places where the harvest is Sivan, then you tackle based on Rashi's reason, you wouldn't be able to send a summons during Sivan, and that could explain what the Rif is saying. On the other hand, places where Jews are not farmers b'chlal, then this whole din might not apply. But then there is also that maybe in fact the Rif would say any month that has a Yom Tov, and it is also a day when people are busy and distracted because of the Yom Tov, even if it's only a 1 day Yom Tov or a 2 day Yom Tov, like Shavuos, and therefore that might be a reason to exclude that as well. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying you don't send summonses to Beis Din during Nisan or Tishrei, lo b'mala Yom Tov, and also not on Erev Yom Tov, lo b'mala Shabsa, and not on Friday, because again, people are busy those times and they may forget. And then when they don't come to Beis Din afterwards, then they're going to be in trouble. And really, it just might be that they forgot. However, what we can do is we can send a summons during Nisan and tell him that after Nisan is over, we want you to come. We're summoning you to the Beis Din. And the same thing to send it during Tishrei and tell him that the date that we've set. For your appointment at Beis Din is after Tishrei is in Cheshvan. That works. The difference being, now, isn't there the concern he may forget? So the Shittim Kubetzis brings from a couple of Rishonim, from the Raman, Rabbeinu Yohanneson, the difference is that between Friday, for example, let's say between Friday and Monday, it's a short amount of time, he might tack a forget, and then he's first going to remember after Monday, and it's too late already. As opposed to when it comes to they send him the summons during Nisan and they tell him you have to appear by us in Ir, it's a long enough time that it's more likely at some point during that time he's going to remember and then mark it on his calendar or whatever and actually be sure to be there at that time. So therefore, there's less of an issue that he's likely to forget, because even if he does forget for a couple of days, he's more likely to remember afterwards. Continues the Gemara, so why don't we send a summons on Friday that should be after Shabbos, that should be on Sunday or Monday, my timer, because a person is busy with his preparations for Shabbos, and therefore he may forget. And again, he may not remember, he may forget altogether, and he's only going to remember a few days later, and by a few days later, it's already too late, as opposed to when it comes from Nisan to after Nisan, or Tishrei to after Tishrei, there's less of an issue with that. So therefore, there's enough time that sometime during that period, he's bound to remember the appointment that he has with Beis Din and make sure to come. Continues the Gemara. Omer Rav Nachman, lo yahavinen zimna lo lebnei kala bekala v'lo lebnei rigla berigla. Here's another point, says Rav Nachman, we don't send summonses to Beis Din to people who are coming for the kala, which means Rashi says they come to hear the drosha on Shabbos. We don't say, you know what, he's in town already on Shabbos. Good, let's tell him right now on Shabbos, come to Beis Din on Monday, because that will discourage him from coming to the kala, from coming to the shir, to the drosha altogether, because you're going to think then Beis Din is going to use that opportunity to waylay me and demand that I give me a summons to Beis Din. V'loy l'bnei rigla b'rigla. Similarly, people who come during the time before Yom Tov, Rashi explains, it means people who are coming within the 30 days before Yom Tov, who are coming to hear the droshas on the halachas of Yom Tov, as we know, Sholem Vidoshin, that we start questioning and investigating and learning the halachas of a Yom Tov 30 days before it. So the same way, people are coming to town, are coming to the Beis Din, are coming to the yeshiva 30 days beforehand to learn these halachas. We don't say, well, you're here anyway, let's tell you that you have a summons to Beis Din. We don't do it for the same reason, because we don't want to discourage them from coming. And we have the example. Ki havu osu l'kamei d'Rav Nachman, In fact, when people would come to Rav Nachman, when you had like this, you had Rav Nachman would be giving his drushas and his shiurim during that time on the day of the Kala, which is Shabbos, or on the day of or 30 days before the Yom Tovim. And then people who have a Din Torah would come to Rav Nachman and say, you know what, listen, Rav Nachman, as long as we're in town, can you please summon our Baal Din, because he's in town as well, and let's get it over with. Rav Nachman would tell them, do you think the whole gathering was for your benefit? The gathering was that people should learn Torah, that people should learn the relevant halachas, not that you should be able to take advantage of it and have us grab a hold of your bali dinim, of your nitba, and bring him to a din Torah. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to send him a summons in the usual way because we don't want to discourage him from coming. However, the Gemara points out, nowadays, and later on when the Gemara was composed, that there are ramoi, there are cheaters, there are people who dafka come only for the purpose of they come figuring that, you know what, we'll come to every shiur, we'll come to every whatever, dafka, in order that Beis Din can't take advantage and summon us to a din Torah, but really they're not coming primarily for, for the Dirosha. They're coming in order to evade Beis Din as much as possible. So then we don't do that. So then we are concerned, and we have to actually check out, and we have to figure out, is the person genuinely coming because he wants to learn Torah, or are we talking about that he's coming only because he wants to use this? It figures every time this way, every time Beis Din sees me, they ha ha, they can't do anything because I'm here for the shiur. So then, therefore, we can't do that. So then we do summon him to Beis Din and get the matter taken care of. The Ramah, by the way, points out in a similar vein, not only as far as Dine Torah, you have also, there was a common minhag in the old days that when a person had a complaint against somebody, and it could be the kind of thing where they don't have enough evidence to bring to Beis Din, they would use some social pressure. They would go and complain and make a public complaint in shul against the guy. So here you have, and then based on that, then maybe that would motivate people to, if they know any Eidos about it, to go and tell Beis Din or whatever it is, and the matter could eventually be taken care of. So that Amar brings an interesting point over there. By the same token, during Nissen or during the Yom Neroim, you have people who come from the villages to the Minyan, same thing. Don't use that opportunity to do this public complaint against them for the same reason, because it may discourage them from coming after all. Only if there's dechi of ramos, if we see that they're stalling again and again, and we see that they're cheating and they're trying to game the system, then we judge right away during the Yom Tov season. He also mentions, by the way, there are places where they have the minhag. If they started a din Torah before Nissan or before Tishrei, then we'll continue and we'll send summonses if necessary, even during that, even during those times, because the din Torah had started before. So fine, he says, "Vahecha the nog, where people have such a minhag, then fine, that's a valid minhag." Okay. The Mishnah had said, "Im hoya davar sheyesh be'achrayus chayav l'shalom." The Mishnah had finished off going back now. So this was all a digression, talking about the procedures of Beis Din and all of that. But now getting back to the Mishnah, we have the case where a person stole something and his children yashin it from him. And we said if it was a dover hamasuyim, if it was something distinctive, then they have to, dover sheyesh be'achrayus, something that has achrayus, then they have to return it. Now, usually, davar sheyesh be'achrayus means karka, but here it can't necessarily mean that, because karka ain't an igzelus. You don't have bechlal, the dinim of gzela don't apply to karka because you can't physically remove it. So therefore, we're talking about metalklin that are as important, that have achrayus. So we quoted at the beginning of the perek, and now the Gemara quotes again, masni le Rebbe le Reb Shimon Brei, that Rebbe taught his son Reb Shimon, loy davar sheyesh be'achrayus mamash. It doesn't literally mean something that yesh be'achrayus, because that would be karka, and you don't and you don't have the concept of gzela when it comes to karka. Ella, I feel a part of a chodesh b'chamor machamor achrab, even if it was a cow and they were using it for plowing, or a donkey and they're using it to carry burdens, chayavim lahachzer mipnei kvod avi, and they still have to return it because of the covet of their father. So because otherwise, people are going to always point to it and say this is the animal that their father stole, as we talked about the other day. First of all, this is only according to Rami Bachama. Rava, we said over there in the Gemara, had a different way of understanding of understanding the Mishnah that no, he learned according to a braisa of Rav Oshia that said that no, only if there's a chrayus nechosim, only if their father had actually left them karka, where there we say there's a shibud on the karka, then they would be required to pay out of that karka, but otherwise not, even though it's a noticeable animal or whatever. So according to Rava, this statement that Rebbe is teaching Reb Shimon would not apply. Api alacha, only according to Romi Bachoma would it apply. And we said also over there that it has to be talking about where the father did tshuva before he passed away. Otherwise, they don't have any particular mitzvah of kibbud av anyhow, because, or at least not as far as this, because fine, he passed away not having done tshuva. Then therefore, if people are going to make fun of him and say that he's a thief, then that might be fine, because then the children are not chayiv in his kibbud. The Rif and the Rosh make that point. Boy, minute of Kahana may Rav. So Rav Kahana asked Rav, "What about so Rebbe is saying we're talking about a cow or a donkey or whatever? What about mita umesavaleh shulchan va'oichal alamahu? What about if the gazlan had stolen a bed and then he's been using it to sit on? Or what if he stole a table and he's been eating on it? On the one hand, you could say such things are not used." They're used inside the house, so people don't see it. So it's not like a cow or a donkey. Maybe there's not so much embarrassment for the father. So maybe they shouldn't be required to return it anyway. Or after all, people do come into their house. People do come in and out of their house, and they see these things. They see this furniture, and therefore there still will be that people are going to make fun of their and insult their parent. And here the parent did tshuva, and you shouldn't be doing that. So therefore, maybe they should be required to return it also. Mipnei kvod avi. So Rav answers him, as the Pasuk says, ten l'chocham v'yech kamod, give to the chocham, and he will become more wise. In other words, I've told you that Rebbe explains it to be referring to a cow or a donkey. You, being a chocham, Rav Kahana, you should be able to understand on your own that, yes, it applies to other cases like that, any case where there could be zilusa, any case where there could be that because this object still is around, then therefore people are going to be are going to be calling the father a ganav or a gazlan. Then therefore, yes, the answer would be a chair or a chair or a bed or a table would have the same din. Okay, Mishnah says, "Ein poten loymatevus hamoichsin v'loymikis shogaboyin." When it comes to exchanging money, you have larger coins. You want to exchange them for smaller ones. You're not allowed to use for that purpose the money that was collected by Mursin or Gaboy. Mursin and Gaboy are various kinds of tax collectors. According to Rashi, Mursin are the ones who are collecting meches, which would be like tolls and customs and things like that. Like, of course, you go on a certain road and then you have to pay a toll. Or, for example, you're transporting certain kinds of merchandise and you have to pay customs taxes on it. So those kinds of things are called a moches. And then a gabai would be the one who collects other kinds of taxes, for example, head taxes and income taxes and things like that. As the Gemara is going to explain, we have reason to think that these people are gazlon for reasons that we're going to talk about in the Gemara. So now what happens is that money that they have in their box, in their collection boxes for the purpose, then that money is considered stolen. So now you can't use that even to exchange, to get change out of it, because then you're using money of gezel. Now Tosfos points out, we're going to have in the Gemara, we're going to have the discussion of whether we have like this, not really in the Gemara over here, actually. We have, well, it's later on, we're going to learn it tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. The question is, when Gzela takes place, do we generally assume that the owner is Miyayish right away? He's going to say to himself, if Gazlan grabbed it from me, I have no easy way of getting it back from him. And the same thing with these tax collectors and toll collectors and whatever, I have no easy way of getting back the money from him. Therefore, I'm Miyayish. So now our Mishnah would go very smoothly according to the Chachamim that you're not allowed to make change from them, because we assume that we assume the owner was not Miyash yet, rather according to the Chachamim. So therefore, the money really is stolen. What about according to Reb Shimon, who said that in general the owner was going to be Miyash? So you have Yush and Shinu Rishus. Nevertheless, Tosfos says it would be a Dover Maguna. It would be a disgusting, repulsive thing to use that money, and therefore you're not allowed to do that even just to make change. Because Tosfos points out, we're talking about the box where they put whatever they collect, and we can assume everything that's in that box is stolen money, and therefore it would be a gnai to use that even just to make change. And continues the mission of in Notland Mahan Tzedakah. Similarly, you're not allowed to take tzedakah from such people. They shouldn't think that they can basically launder the money. We're going to steal money from people for taxes and tolls or whatever that we're not supposed to collect, as the Gemara is going to explain what the circumstances are. And then they're going to think they can whitewash it with giving tzedakah. So you can't do that. However, you can take money from you can take or take change from him from money that this tax collector has in his house, which is probably his personal money, or money that he has in the street where he's not taking it from the collection box, because then we have good reason to assume that particular, after all, person he has money of his own as well, so therefore that's more likely to be honest, legitimate money, kosher to gelt, and therefore that you can take change from him and other such things, but not the money that he collects for his tolls and taxes and customs, which, as the Gemara is going to point out, we're talking about ones that he collects illegally. In fact, the Rambam phrases it a bit differently. The Rambam says that such people, their money is chaskos in mina gezel. It's a chazaka that pretty much everything they own is from gezel, and therefore you can't do with that. But even then, no sekelim on the Rambam explain that it's not so simple. There is the distinction that the Mishnah is making over here between whether we're talking about money that he likely collected from gzela, or whether we're talking about money that's more likely to be his own personal money, where there you have more leeway with it because the fact is that he does have money of his own, so it's much less of a problem. Even with such people, there will be, and now it's interesting, actually. So it's actually the Mishnah Melech on Rambam there actually wonders. He says that Rambam says that everything, he says that a chazaka is that all their money comes from gezel, and that would mean even their personal money. But the Mishnah Melech actually wonders, how is that so? If we're saying over here that they can have personal money of their own, which is legitimate. Anyway, so the Gemara asks Tana. So first of all, the Gemara says Tana. Now, what you could do, even with these moichsin and gaboyim, is if you owe them a smaller amount and you only have a large coin, then you can give them that large coin and get changed. That's not a problem, because that's called matzul miyodei. Rashi says it's like you're saving your money from his hand. You have to somehow pay him, and you don't have a smaller coin. So it's one thing, in other words, to tell him here's a $100 bill. Well, give me a bunch of 20s. We're there. It's not matzul miyodei. Go get your change someplace else. But if he wants you to pay $20 and you only have a $100 bill, you would be entitled to take the $80 change from them. Tosfos points out, again, according to the Chachamim, So according to Rav Shimon, it's very easy to understand, because there was Yush already, but according to the Chachamim, still, the fact is, we don't know 100% for sure that the $80 he's going to return to you comes from Gezel. It may not. So therefore, legitimately, you can take back that money from him. Now, the question is, Umoichsin, what do you mean when it comes to these toll or customs or whatever collectors that they're considered gazlonim? Why? What's the problem? Didn't Shmuel say the law of the kingdom is the law, meaning that that's valid law, apitoda? And that includes, in other words, so now the way it works with these tax collectors and whatever is that the king would give them permission. It wasn't like nowadays, for example, where you file your own taxes. In those times, a common way of doing things was that the king would, somebody would contract with the king, I will collect the taxes, and I promise you that I'm going to bring you X amount in tax revenue per year, whether we're talking about income taxes or head taxes or customs taxes or whatever. That would be the idea. You would contract that right from the government. So now the king has a legitimate right to collect taxes. Why that is a big machlokas rishonim. There are two major reasons that are given for it. One is because you live in a country, you voluntarily. One is because a country has to have laws. And when you live in a country, it means you're willing to accept the law of the land as the law that you're going to live under. So the Rashbam in Bava Basra explains when it brings there a dinner to Machos a dinner, then the Rashbam explains that's the reason behind it. Because the fact that you live in a country means that you're voluntarily subjecting yourselves to its laws. In which case, then that would only apply if the king is a legitimate king that they accept. The person then goes and then overthrows the government and makes himself king, then maybe dinner to Machos a dinner wouldn't necessarily apply. On the other hand, the Rishonim, on the other hand, the Rashba and the Ran learn that the reason is because the land belongs to the king. And after all, if you don't follow his laws, he has the right to kick you out, the same way as if you rent a place from a person and you don't pay the rent or you don't follow his rules, and he has the right to kick you out. So as long as you're living in his land, then therefore you have to keep his laws, because it's as if he's the landlord and you're the tenant. In which case, then a big nafkamina between that would be, what about in Eretz Yisrael especially under a Jewish government like we have nowadays? So if we say the idea is because people voluntarily accept the laws of the land on themselves when they're living there, well, then that would apply in Eretz Yisrael as well. Anybody who lives in Eretz Yisrael is voluntarily accepting that the Israeli government has the right to make laws. On the other hand, that would work according to the Rashbam. On the other hand, if you say like the Rashba and the Ran, that the idea behind it is because the land belongs to him and he can decide who's allowed to live there or not, well, then the land of Eretz Yisrael doesn't belong any more to the members of the Israeli government than it belongs to every Yid. Every Yid has a place in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore dinah d'machos adinah may not apply over there. So there's a big machloikas achronim about the different reasons over here and the nafkaminas and how it would apply exactly. On top of that, there's also a discussion of what's the scope of dinah d'machos adinah. Does it apply only, like we're saying over here, to things as far as taxes and customs and things like that? Does it apply also to other laws, say, for example, let's say traffic laws? Would you say that not running red lights or not speeding or whatever is included in dinah d'malchus adinah? Some rishonim say yes, because these are laws that they make for the benefit of the citizens. Others would say that dinah d'malchus adinah really only applies to things where the government really has a direct interest in them, such as collecting taxes or whatever, where they have a direct financial interest, not so much necessarily those other kinds of laws. I mean, you'd be chayiv in those laws anyway for other reasons, such as v'nishmaut and mo'ed v'nafshei seichem, but that's another matter. One thing they do point out is obviously we don't say that the laws of the government override the dinim of the Torah and everything in all areas of dinim ominous, otherwise we'd have no dinim ominous at all. So everybody agrees that there is a certain limitation on dinah d'malchus adinah, but everybody agrees that it does apply to things like collecting taxes. So the question is, why are we calling them tax collectors and toll collectors of our Mishnah? Why are we calling them ganovim and gazlonim and saying we can't even make change from their money? What's wrong? They're following the law. The answer is, Amar Rav Chanina bar Kahana, Amar Shmuel, b'moichas she'en le'kitzva. We mean, we're talking about a tax collector where there's no limit. The king didn't tell him exactly how much he expects him to collect. So this guy is collecting as much as he wants. So that's not considered dinah d'malchusa, because dinah d'malchusa would only be again when he's doing it for the benefit of the kingdom, not when he's doing it to enrich himself. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Yane, they gave a different answer, that we're talking about moichas who takes it up on his own, that instead of going to the king, I'm going to lease this right to collect taxes from you. Instead, he goes on his own and starts collecting taxes. I guess he figures afterwards, I'll go to the king and I'll present him with what I did. But the fact is, he wasn't appointed by the king. He wasn't appointed by the government. And therefore, that would be another example where he's called a gazlan. Whatever he takes is illegitimate. In fact, the Yamshal Shloimeh, the Marshal, points out, even if afterwards the government sees that he's doing that and they don't prevent him from doing that, but still he wasn't appointed to begin with by the government, so it's not considered dinin v'achos adin. Okay, the Gemara says, ikut demasni lo achol. Now there are those who learn that this discussion of why is the guy considered a gazlan, there are some who learn it in connection not with our Mishnah, but in connection with the Mishnah and Masechta Kilayim. The Mishnah says, "Lo yubash adam kilayim." A person is not allowed to wear kilayim. A person is not allowed to wear shatnez. Afilo al gabe asarim bgadim, even if he's wearing it, even if he's wearing the shatnez clothing on top of 10 other pieces of clothing, so he's obviously not using it to keep himself warm. And afilo, and nevertheless, it's still aser. Afilo lahav, and not afilo lahav riach bayas hameches, where he's doing it in order to evade, in order to evade tolls. So there's two major explanations among Rishonim what he expects to accomplish by that. One is that one is that they would charge people for the clothes they're carrying, like in their suitcases or whatever, or that they're carrying to sell, but not for the clothes they're wearing. So this guy figures that, you know what, I'll wear this kelayim, and that way I won't have to pay. That way I won't have to pay customs on it. The other explanation is that kelayim would be noticeably different than non-kelayim clothing, and therefore, when the tax collectors see that he's wearing kelayim, they're going to think that he's a goy, and they're going to accept, they're going to exempt him from certain taxes that were binding only on Jews. By the way, the post can talk about in this connection of dinah d'malchus adinah. As long as you have a law that's fairly applied across the board, then it's considered, then it can be concluded, such as taxes or whatever, it can be included in dinah d'malchus adinah, meaning, and they say, even if it's one that discriminates against Jews, as long as it discriminates against all Jews equally, for example, let's say you had in the olden days, it was very common they had special taxes for Jews, then nevertheless, this is still considered part of dinah d'malchus adinah. So here we're talking about, let's say, a scenario like that, where the tax collectors, if they think that he's a goy, they're not going to charge him the Jewish tax. But if they think that he's a, but if he's a yid, they will. So now he, so one explanation is then that he wants to wear the kelayim to pretend that he's a goy. A number of Rishonim disagree with that because you say b'chlal, never mind the dinim of kelayim, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to hide the fact that you're a yid, because that would be like denying, that would be like denying Hashem, denying Yiddishkeit. It's actually quite complicated, the dinim about that. And, you know, we know, in fact, there are examples during the Holocaust, for example, where people disguised themselves as goyim, and sometimes even they were able to accomplish tremendous things of saving Jewish lives by that. But the whole thing is actually not so simple with under what circumstances a Yid is allowed to pretend to be a goy or not. In any case, there is that explanation, but there's the other explanation, again, that that he's doing it in order not to have to pay customs on this particular suit, because instead he'll be wearing it. So even though he's not wearing it for the purpose of kelayim, he's not wearing it for the purpose of warming himself, nevertheless, it's still awesome. Now, so the Gemara says, Masnisin deloik Rabbi Akiva. Now, apparently, that Mishnah in kelayim would not be like, it would not be like Rabbi Akiva. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Also la'avriach as a meches, that you're not allowed to evade customs like that. Reb Shimon Oimer Meshum Reb Akiva Motor La'avriach as a meches, and Reb Shimon says in the name of Reb Akiva that you are allowed to use these kinds of things to evade, to evade tolls. So some say that, again, when we talk about what kind of tolls are we talking about, given that dinah d'malchus adinah, then the Gemara is going to explain in a couple of lines that you can have the same points that Rabbi Yanai, the same points that Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yanai were making about distinguishing between different kinds of tax collectors could apply to that Mishnah as well. So the Gemara says, "Bishlema le'in kelayim." I can understand as far as the question of kelayim what Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon are arguing about. But hakamiflegi, the machlokas is as follows: Demar sabad davashenim askaven motor, Demar sabad davashenim askaven also. It's the regular machlokas that we have in Hilchos Shabbos and in other areas of halacha, whether you have davashenim askaven. So like this, he's not intending to use it for warmth. He's intending to use the kelayim for a different purpose in order that they should think he's a goy and not charge him a certain toll, or that they should exempt him from paying for this clothing, from paying taxes on this clothing because he's wearing it. So therefore, so the basic machlokas would be about davar she'eino miskaven that we have in many places in Shas. So demar sabad davar she'eino miskaven mutter. Reb Shimon holds that such a thing is mutter, and therefore you don't have an isur kilayim. Umar sabad davar she'eino miskaven also, whereas Rabbi Akiva holds it's also, and therefore even though you're not benefiting from the kilayim in that way, nevertheless you still nevertheless it's still also. Now Tosfos points out over here that you actually have a din based on that. It would mean, in other words, Reb Shimon would say, even though it's not even allowed to, we have a case over there involving tailors, whether they're carrying the clothes on their shoulders or whether they're wearing them to model them for their customers or whatever. Reb Shimon allows such a thing, even to wear it. So the same thing over here, Reb Shimon would allow you to wear the kilayim. However, Tosfos does point out there in Shabbos, it does have to be, it's not Psik Resha, so therefore it is talking about he's wearing other clothes as well, so he's not really necessarily having Hana from the Shatnez, and therefore it's Davar Sheinu Meskan. Anyway, so we understand the Machloikas about the Kelayim aspect of it. We understand that's what they're arguing about. But we have to ask, what do we mean that you're using it to evade customs? How is such a thing allowed? Again, didn't Shmuel say dinner to machosa dinner, and therefore you have to pay your taxes and customs and whatever because the king said so? So here we have the same answers as before. That you have the same two answers that they said. Maybe the machloikas of Rab Chanina, Bakahana, and Rab Yanai is referring to that Mishnah in Kelayim rather than our Mishnah in Bava Kama that was saying we're talking about a moichas who has no limit. The king didn't put a limitation on him of how much he can collect, so therefore he's collecting as much as he wants. And then you have the other answer that he himself voluntarily went and started collecting taxes, where again then he's not appointed by the government. And continues the Gemara of the Ikka Demasni Aha. Then there are those who learn that Rab Chanina and Rab Yanai's statements are referring to yet another mission. Mishnah says in Masechta Nedarim, we learned it a year or two back, Nodrin Laharogin, you're allowed to, suppose you have a person who's threatening to kill a person if he doesn't give them such and such property of his. So you'd want to make a neder to him. You'd want to, for example, tell them this produce that you want to take actually belongs to the king, where then he'll be afraid to take it. And the guy will say, okay, well, then if that's really true, then take a neder to that effect. And the guy says, fine, I make a neder that all Paris in the world will be also to me if what I'm saying is not true. And then that causes this murderer to leave him alone because he's afraid of tangling with the king. And he figures you must be telling the truth. And really, it's called Nidre Onsin, and you're not actually chayiv in that neder. It has to be, if possible, of course, then you, so like this, for example, he says, you're Osru Kaperas Shaba Olam Alai. He's thinking in his mind, Tosfos brings from the Gemara in Nidorim over there, he's thinking in his mind they're only going to be also that one day. Usually we say Dvarim Shaba Levi Enim Dvarim, but here, where it's an Oinas, then that's a lamb. You could have, it doesn't even have to be a whole day. It could be that he's thinking only for a short amount of time. Tosfos points out an example that you had in their times where you had Goyish Poritzim and noblemen and whatever would make Jews take a neder that they're not going to leave and move to another town. Meanwhile, Yid is going to want to move to another town because the local Poritz is treating them badly. So the same thing, they can make this neder and it means they're not going to go. And even you're thinking in your mind, it means I'm not going to go today. Obviously, better that he should say it with that he should whisper it with his lips. It would be a bitter gummer, Tosfos says, but even if not, then it is acceptable. So that's what the Mishnah is saying. Nodrin laharogin, v'la charomin or mosin. Similarly to charomin, people who are going to try and steal his property or get him in other kinds of legal trouble, or mosin or mosin, and to tax collectors, all those kinds of things. You can swear to them, for example, shehishal truma, that the produce that they want to take is truma. And let's say we're talking about Jewish harogin and anosin. And whatever, they're going to respect the fact that it's truma, even though they're rishoyim, they still respect the fact that it's truma, and they're not going to take it. Or you tell them shehi shal beis melech, or that this produce actually belongs to the king, and therefore they're going to be afraid to start up with the king. Even though it's not actually truma and it doesn't belong to the king, nevertheless you're allowed to under that circumstance of onus. You can tell them that is, and you can back it up with a neder, and the neder is considered nidre onsin, and we say you can have in mind that it's only going to be a neder only for a certain amount of time, or only that it's going to be only for certain particular types of produce or whatever. Usually we say dvarim shabalei v'enim dvarim, but in this case, because of the onus, it's allowed. So again, the question is, what do you mean olamosin? V'amashmol dinner d'machose dinner. So here you have again the question, what do you mean by mosin when Shmuel is saying dinner d'machose dinner, and they have the legal right to collect taxes? And again, the answer is the same answers as before of what kind of mochsin we're talking about. So you have these, the same answer has been used in connection with three different Mishnayos that mention Moichsim, where we're saying that that not necessarily you have Moichsim who are legitimately collecting on behalf of the government, and with them we say Dinah D'Machos Adinah, but then on the other hand we have the ones, the two types that we're saying over here, either Ein Lo Kitzba, where they're collecting as much as they want, or where they weren't even appointed by the government. And therefore, they're not considered. Therefore, they're considered gazlonim. And therefore, you have the dinim that we said in these various mishnayos concerning them, that you're allowed to evade their tolls and taxes, and that you're not allowed to even make change from their money because that would be using their stolen money. Rav Ashi Yomar b'Moshes Knani. Rav Ashi says a whole different answer that. That in fact the case when we're talking about as far as that he's considered a gazlon, that you're allowed to evade his taxes, whatever, is talking about a goyish tax collector. Now we have the word knani over here. That's what's changed by the censors. The original manuscripts of the Gemara and early prints of the Gemara had the word goy or nochri or something like that. So meaning, in other words, the difference is yes, dinah d'machus adinah. But Rav Ashi is saying that when it comes to a goyish tax collector, you have more, there's no problem, even if you're goyzel, even if you're evading his taxes and not paying him, where there's no chilul Hashem, then there's no problem to evade paying him what you're supposed to be paying him. You have a machlokas rishonim, which when Rav Ashi says b'moichas goy, which one of those mishnayos is he talking about? Is he talking about our Mishnah that Ashba points out? Maybe not. I mean, even if we're saying over here that you're allowed, that Gezel Goy would be Mutter, nevertheless, still, he's collecting taxes, it's legitimate collection, so it's not stolen money, why shouldn't you be allowed to make change from it? And then also, the Rashba discusses whether it does apply to our Mishnah or whether it applies to the Mishnah in Dorim. Would you be allowed to make a neder to such a guy when he's a legitimate tax collector, but he's a goy, and we're saying maybe gezel goy mutter, but maybe that's not considered an oinus to the extent where a neder like that should be considered nidre oinsi. So Rav Ashi is going to say that where there's no chilul Hashem involved, and he doesn't realize that you're tricking him, then such a thing would be allowed. D'tanya, as we learn in a brisa, Yisrael Knani Anas Shaboladin. When you have a Jew and a Knani Anas, this is again a change from the censor. The original wording of the Gemara had, instead of Knani, had the word Goy, and it didn't have the word Anas at all. So like this, Knani Anas would mean a Knani, one of the ancient Knani nations, and Anas would be a tough guy, where it's going to be difficult if you paid him money to get it back from him legally. But the original Girsa in the Gemara, without the censorship, is just Nochri. See, Yisrael of Nochri or Goy, whatever Shaboladin, Imata Yochel Zakeo B'dinei Yisrael, if you're able to find, if a Dayan is able to find that Alpitoda, the Jew would be in the right and he would be entitled to whatever it is that he's claiming from the Goy, Zakehu, then do that. But Emoloi, and we tell the Goy, Kach Dineinu, look, these are our laws. You wanted to come to a Jewish based din, then you follow our laws. B'dinei Knanim, what about though, continues the Braisa. If you find that according to Goyish law, then the Yid would be in the right. You would find that according to Jewish law, the Yid would in fact have to pay. But according to the local Goyish law, in fact, there are reasons to say that he would be potter. Then also Zakehu. Then either way, say that the Yid is right for Emeloi, and you tell the Goy, Kach Dincham, look, your laws are like that. So one way or the other, the Imlav, and if not, Boyin Olabak Kifin. If not, then continues Rabbi Shmuel, you could even come against the Goy with various kinds of trickery. You do anything possible in order to exonerate the Yid and not have to make him pay the Goy, Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. As you can imagine, this Gemara over here is a favorite one of anti-Semites because they're taking over here the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel and acting as though it's accepted lahalacha. But anyway, but Rabbi Shmuel is saying, no matter what, when you have a case in front of Beis Din between a Jew and a Goy, always make sure in whatever way possible to say that the Yid should not have to pay. Did Rabbi Shmuel? Rabbi Akiva ein boin ala ba'kiven mepnei kiddush Hashem. Rabbi Akiva says you can't act towards the Goy in an unfair way because of kiddush Hashem. He's going to realize that you tricked him or whatever, and then it's going to cause a chilul Hashem. What we see from that, says Ravashi, that essentially gezel goy is mutter, that it would be allowed to be goyzel him. We're just saying that we're the concern of Chilul Hashem, then not. So therefore, Ravashi is saying that the cases that we're dealing with over here, maybe not all three Mishnayos that we discussed before, like the Rashba says, but at least in some of them, at least in the one about the Kilayim, for example, we can be talking about that you're allowed to trick the guy into thinking that you're a goy. You trick him into thinking you're wearing this clothing, and therefore you shouldn't have to pay taxes on it, and he's not going to realize the difference, and therefore there's no chilul Hashem, and therefore such a thing would be mutter, even if he's legitimately collecting taxes on behalf of the government. With all that said, by the way, it is true that the Meiri does point out that all of these dinim really only apply when, well, first of all, many Rishonim say it doesn't apply to a Ger Toshav, and the Meiri goes further and he says basically all Goyim nowadays are considered Ger Toshav. He says that these dinim primarily only apply back in the olden days when people had no concept of a universal concept of morality or whatever. Nowadays, even nowadays, the goyim, for the most part, they at least pay lip service to the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, and therefore he says they wouldn't be included in the dinim over here, and therefore it's not even just a matter of chilul Hashem, it would be outright usur to steal anything from them. Not everybody agrees with that, but that's how the Meiri writes it. Anyway, so the Gemara says, "V'Rabbi Akiva, time of the Iko Kiddush Hashem, Halakha Kiddush Hashem, Boin." It sounds like even according to Rabbi Akiva, where there's no issue of Kiddush Hashem, where the goy is not going to realize that you tricked him, then it sounds like you could even use unfair arguments against him in order to make it that the yid shouldn't have to pay him or the yid should be able to collect from him. The question is, v'gezo knani mishori, is it in fact mutter according to Rabbi Akiva to steal from a goy? V'atanya, Om Reb Shimon, Dovah Zedorosh Reb Akiva K'shabom Yisfirin, where Reb Shimon says that Reb Akiva Darshin, the following point, when he came from Zfirin. Zfirin is the name of a town. Some say that's the same as you have in Parashas Maaseh in the borders of Eretz Yisrael. You have a town called Zifroina, so that may be the same place. Whatever, when Rabbi Akiva came back from there to Eretz Yisrael, he darshan as follows. Minayim l'gezo p'nani shu osir. How do we know that stealing from a goy is osir? Talmud Loimar, and the point is, before she make the point, because after all, Rashi makes a point elsewhere that in Sanhedrin, that after all, since the pasuk says by Sasha Kesurei Achav Loi Sigzo, then maybe then that would in and of itself that wouldn't include a goy because a goy is not Reacha, but now therefore we need a special limud to say that you're not allowed to steal from a goy, and then the Marshal talks about that actually it comes out from that it's an isser, that it's a separate isser of its own, and maybe it's only an isser Dirabonan, and the pasuk over here is only an asmachta. On the other hand, the Rambam says not. The Rambam says flat out that to steal from a goy or from a yid is exactly the same thing, and they're both also daraisa. In fact, by the way, so even though, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara over here, there are technicalities, there are cases where such a thing is mutter when it comes to goyim, it's worth mentioning the Be'er HaGoyla points out when he deals with these halachas in Shulchan Aruch, he says, you should know, I've seen people who use the various loopholes over here to cheat goyim, and they wound up losing all their fortune. And on the other hand, there were people who dealt honestly with the goyim and their fortune was preserved. So you have that to consider as well, that even if technically al pi halacha, there might be times, as we're going to go on in the Gemara over here, to say there might in principle be times when you are allowed to take advantage financially of a goy. Nevertheless, as the Be'er HaGoyla is saying, you may not end up so wealthy. Anyway, so Rav Akiva Davshin, minayin l'gezo knani shu osu, how do we know you're not allowed to steal from a goy? Talmud Loimar, you have when an Eved Ivri is sold to a goy, as it describes in Parshas Bahar, and Pasuk says, Achrei Nimkar, after he was sold, Ge'ula Tiyaloi, there should be a Ge'ula for him, meaning that one of his relatives is required to buy him back from the goy. Meaning, Shelo Yib Shechenu V'yetze, so that means you can't just pull the Eved away and then let him go. It has to be, there has to be a Ge'ula. You actually have to go to the Goyish owner and offer him money and buy back the Eved's, and then buy back the Eved's freedom. Tosfos points out now they're according to the opinions that say that Gezel Goy Mutter, they would understand different, they would take a different drasha from this pasuk. But Rabbi Akiva is saying that this pasuk, Ge'ula Tiyaloi, implies that Basin can't just tell the, can't just, for example, go over to the Eved Ivri and tell him, run away and we'll help you. No, we have to actually pay the Goy for his freedom. Continues Rabbi Akiva. Yocho yigloim olav. Now you would think that maybe yigloim on him. Rashi says that maybe the word yigloim can mean to double, to increase. So maybe in that case, you should allow the goy to increase the amount that he wants to charge for the ebed, and no matter what he wants, you're going to have to pay him. Because after all, the Pnei Yeshua says, maybe the vote is, the Torah would be saying that it's so important to get the guy out of working for the goy, so he doesn't end up assimilating among the goyim. Maybe the Torah would say that no matter what the goy charges, you should pay him. And he's going to, and Talmud Lomar, therefore the pasuk says, v'chishav in kenehu, he should calculate with the one who bought him, meaning yedaktik in kenehu, meaning you make an exact calculation, neither too little nor too much. Tosfos and many other Rishonim disagree with Rashi's explanation of Yigloim Olav, and they bring from the Oruch that the word Yigloim can be either Maloshin Golem, like you're treating the guy as though he's a Golem, like he doesn't know better, and you're cheating him as far as the amount of money. Or it means that, you're paying him less, where the word golem means like an unfinished thing, so like you're giving him an unfinished amount of money, and get the eved back. And no, we're saying b'chishav u'kenehu, you have to do an exact calculation. You can't cheat him, and you can't trick him by giving him less money or whatever. Anyway, the point is, we see from that gezel goy is also. So the answer is Amar Rav Yosef, like Kasha, Haba Knani, Haba Ger Toshav. It depends. A full-fledged goy, one who worships Avodah Zarah, versus a Ger Toshav who accepted not to worship Avodah Zarah, and the rest of the Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach, him you're not allowed. Then Rabbi Akiva is saying that gezel from him is also, but the other kind would be mutter, and that's what Rabbi Akiva was saying. That's what Rabbi Ashi was saying before. Therefore, that when you have a goyish and moiches, then you would be allowed to evade paying tolls and taxes or whatever to him by, for example, wearing the clothing and pretending, and then pretend by wearing the shatnez clothing. But the Gemara says, Amalei Abaye, Bal Tavayu, Gabi Hadori Ksibi. What do you mean? The fact is that both things, the Ger and the Ger Toshav, are both mentioned together, one after the other in the Pasuk. Because the Abraisa, which we learned in Masech the Kiddushin, says when the Torah talks about over there about the Eved Knani, being about the Eved Ivri being sold to a goy, loylacha. So first it says loylacha. You might even have an Eved Ivri who's so poor that he's sold not only to you, a fellow yid, el leger, but even to a ger, meaning ger toshav, shenem leger, as the pasuk says leger, v'loy leger tzedek el leger toshav, not even a ger tzedek, but rather to a ger toshav, shenem leger toshav, and mishpachas ger, when the pasuk continues, the family of a ger, zehu ovid kechavim, that means a full-fledged goy, an ovid avod zara, who's the family of the from which the ger came. So you might even have a yid who's sold as an evid to a goy, to an actual ovid avod zara. And then when the pasuk continues that a yid might be sold to Eker, that means the person who's sold for Avodah Zarah itself, meaning as Rashi explains on the pasuk, and as we learn in Kiddushin, doesn't mean that he's actually going to be worshipping Avodah Zarah, but it means that he's going to be, for example, chopping wood and drawing water and doing other menial tasks like that for an Avodah Zarah, for an Avodah Zarah temple. So we see, in other words, the pasuk is describing that a person, that a yid may go from bad to worse. At the beginning of the Braisa mentions, you have the case where the person is being over on the dinim of Shemitah, and if he doesn't do tshuva, then he starts going from bad to worse. The point is, Abaye is saying, you see very clearly, the pasuk is mentioning in the same breath a ger toshav and a full fledged avodah zara, and an ovid avodah zara, and both of them it's saying that you can't, and both of them would say v'chishav u'kenehu, that you have to make the exact calculation with him and not try to get the ebed ivri to run away without paying at all and not underpay him. So what are you telling me? There's a difference between a ger toshav and a goy in that regard. Ella Amar Rava like Kasha can be Gzele can Bahavas Hafka also. There's a difference between outright stealing from him versus undoing a loan of him. Meaning to actually take money from him, that would be also. But we're talking about for example, the case when we're talking about evading tolls or customs or whatever, that would be something else. Of course, how also that's it. It's as if the goy, essentially it's as if the goy lent you money and now you're failing to pay back. So that kind of thing would be mutter when it comes to a goy. But Omalei Abaye, Eved Ivri, Afkar Sava Osei Hu. What do you mean though? In that case, an Eved Ivri is also Afkar Sava Osei. Abaye considers that the goy does not actually own the yid's body. He only owns his work, so therefore, in effect, it's also like he lent him money, and the yid is going to be working for him for however many years, and then he's going to go free at the end. So it's considered like a loan, and yet Rabbi Akiva is doubting from the pasuk that you can't do afkas hava asa either. So that you can't try to get the yid out of there without paying the full price. So you see that afkas hava asa is a problem as well. And the answer is Rava Latime. Rava, who answered that there's a difference, goes according to his shitta, the Amar Rava, Eved Ivri, Gufay Konui. Rava says that actually when a goy buys an Eved Ivri, the goof is actually owned by the master. It's not just that the master owns the work, and therefore, in fact, it would be considered a gezel to make him run away, and therefore that would be why Rabbi Akiva is saying you can't do that. But Afghasava also, when you have, for example, when it comes to the customs that we said before, to evade those, then you could still say, says Rava, according to Rabbi Akiva, such a thing would be allowed, and that would explain Rav Ashi's answer on Omar Aleph that we're talking about when it comes to wearing the kilayim in order to evade customs in whatever way we talked about over there. Then according to Rabbi Akiva, that would be fine as long as there's no Chilul Hashem involved, because it's only Hafkas Avasai. So the Gemara continues on this topic. Omar Bibi Bagidol, Omar Shimon Chasida. Gezel Knani Osir Avedose Muteris. Now, you're not allowed to steal from a goy, but you are allowed to keep a lost object that he found and not return it. Zele Osir, where do we see that Gezel of his is Osir? Kedom Rav Huna. As we find what Rav Huna says, Minayin the Gezel Knani Shu Osir, Rav Huna brings a different pasuk. Now, before we had the limud of Rabbi Akiva from the case of the Eved Ivri that says that you can't steal from a goy. Here, Rav Huna is going to bring a different pasuk. Actually, the Rosh points out you need both of them, because by the Eved Ivri, you could say there's a Chilul Hashem involved, but over here, Stam Gezel, maybe it's not, maybe it would be Mutter. And on the other hand, if you only had Rav Huna's thing, then you would say you're not actually grabbing the Eved from him, you're helping him escape or something. So therefore, the Rosh explains you end up needing both limudim. Anyway, the pasuk says, "Shenemar, v'achalta es kol am asher Hashem lekecha noisin loch." You will eat up all the nations that Hashem is giving you. Now, in context, Marashah points out this is talking about the seven nations of Canaan, and it means that you're gonna eat up and you're gonna wipe them out and you're gonna take over all of their property. But since it says kol ha'amim, then it means other nations as well. Besides which, also Marashah points out, v'achalta is not really appropriate. You have to destroy them, not just that you're consuming and eating their property. So therefore, bizman shein mesurim biyadcha, v'loy bizman shein mesurim biyadcha. So therefore, when are you allowed to consume their money and their property is only when they're under your control. That's asher Hashem alekecha noisin loch, but not when they're not under your control. So the Ravid explains that we mean, in other words, at a time of war, that at a time of war, when you're fighting against them, then their money is free for the taking. Because look, you're not going to say that their money should be any more serious than their goof. On the other hand, there are achronim that Amakna and the Chazon Ish talk about that maybe even when they're just kovosh tachas yodcha, when they're subjugated by Jews, then maybe such things would be mutter, although the Chazon Ish says it would have to be the entire nation. One thing that's negeya for that nowadays is, for example, the Arabs in Eretz Yisrael. Some of them are kovosh tachas yodcha, but by no means all of them, based on what the Chazon Ish is saying, then you wouldn't have any of this heter then for them. Anyway, avedose muteres, on the other hand, you're allowed to keep a lost object that a goy lost, and you don't have to return it to him. How do we know you found a lost object of a goy that you're allowed to keep it? And the pasuk says, "L'chol avedas achicha." Anything that your brother, that a fellow yid loses, then you have to return. L'achicha at the machzav, at the machzav aknani. So you only have to return it to your fellow yid, but not to a goy. So the Gemara asks, "Ve'emahani mili hecha dole osi liyode?" Why? Maybe that means only when you didn't actually pick up the lost object yet. Then you're saying you don't have to buy a yid. You're not allowed to ignore it, and by a goy you would be allowed to. Dole mechayev la'aduri basra. You don't have to go and make the effort to go and return it. Avol hecha de osi liyode. But how do you know? Maybe if you actually picked it up and it's in your hands, ema lahadra. Maybe you're required to return it, regardless whether it belongs to a yid or a goy. Amar Ravina, no, because the pasuk says mitzasa. The pasuk says you found it. Da'asoyli yodei mashma. The word mitzasa implies that you actually have it in your possession, and nevertheless, we're saying because it says achicha, then because it says achicha, then nevertheless you don't have to return it. In fact, there is a Gemara elsewhere in Sanhedrin that says that you shouldn't return it because it's called Mechazik Kedei Over Avera. You're causing that now he's going to be able to use that money for improper purposes where you shouldn't. Better you should be keeping it. However, Tanya the Pinchas Ben Yair Omer, but Mokum Sheish Chilul Hashem, Afilu Avedasa Aser. However, the Pinchas Ben Yair says, where there's a Chilul Hashem involved, then even a lost object belonging to a goy would be Aser. In other words, if you're talking about, let's say, for example, you have it was lost in a place which is mostly Jews. So the goy is going to put two and two together. He's going to think, well, I lost it in this place where there are so many Jews and nobody returned it to me. So it must be one of them stole it. So then you would have to return it as a matter of halacha. Even when not, by the way, you have the Yerushalmi mentions a couple of examples where Chachamim returned something in order to make a Kiddush Hashem. You have the famous example of Rav Shimon Shatach with the donkey and the jewel. You have a couple of other examples like that. So you have that as well, that where it's possible to, where you're able to make a Kiddush Hashem with it, then that's another valid reason to return a goy's lost object. And yeah, Ad Hayom Hazeh, you have examples like that. A few years back, there was something all over the news where a Yid had bought this desk and then he took it apart and found like $98,000 in there. And he tracked down the original owner and returned it to her, and it made an enormous Kiddush Hashem and all the headlines. So those are the kind of thing where, yeah, you would be required to do it mitzad that. And again, based on what the Meiri was saying before, then anyway, he says that a lot of the dinim we're talking about over here about goyim only apply to ones who don't even keep the Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach, whereas nowadays he says that's not really applicable. Then in any case, you might be required to return a goy's lost object, regardless whether there's Kiddush Hashem or Chilul Hashem involved. Okay, so we'll continue on Motzei Shabbos, Bez Hashem, and we'll continue discussing these various dinim of Gezel Goy and Tos Goy and all of that.